This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about Latino health. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Max Cuevas didn't have it easy growing up. His family and all the families he knew in the little town of Lindsay, California, made their living working in the fields, harvesting citrus fruits.
You're carrying about a 70-pound sack that you're filling with either oranges or lemons, and you're climbing up and down a ladder. And once it's filled, then you go dump it, and then the process starts again.
During the week, Max and his 8 siblings would go to school. Then on weekends, they would work with their parents. The same was true for all school breaks.
Any holiday, we'd be out there with them. So during the Christmas break, we'd be out there in the fields with my mom and dad.
During their summer break, they would drive up to San Jose, living in tent camps and picking cherries, apricots, and pears until August. Then they would drive south to Fresno for grape season before returning to Lindsay for back to school and the next orange season.
That was the cycle for us, year in, year out.
The work was tough, but their family was close. They spent a lot of time laughing, joking around.
Somehow my mom and dad made it fun.
But then tragedy struck. One of Max's brothers became sick. He was prescribed penicillin and had a severe allergic reaction. A few days later, he died. The whole family was devastated.
Seeing the hurt and the crying, and it was inconsolable. I could see it in my mom and dad, my grandmother.
Seeing his family so helpless in the face of his brother's death, Max made a decision that changed his life.
Maybe if I can become a physician, maybe it'll make a difference.
He did become a physician, and he is making a difference, not just for his own patients, but by advocating for changes that are affecting thousands of people in communities that need access to care. More than 63 million Latinos are living in the U.S. They are the largest racial or ethnic minority. In states like California, more than a quarter of Latinos speak Spanish at home, and many of them say they're not able to speak English very well. Language barriers often get in the way of quality health care, as do cultural barriers, and there's a shortage of physicians to serve this population. On this episode, we'll look at solutions in providing better care to Latino communities and patients. To get started, let's stick with the story of Max Cuevas, who decided to become a physician after his brother's death. Charlie Garcia picks up the story from here.
When Max first announced that he was going to become a doctor, no one really believed that this small-town Mexican kid could actually succeed.
I let classmates and the school teachers know, and they were sort of like, well, that's nice to have dreams, but don't worry if your dreams aren't fulfilled. I guess politely trying to tell me, yeah, right.
But the more he dreamed of becoming a doctor, the more he started to become aware of all the health issues the people around him were facing. One day, in a tent camp up in San Jose, he overheard a woman talking about her sickness. She was suffering from pain in the midsection and brought her daughter along to the doctor to translate.
The mom takes her daughter with her to translate because the mom couldn't speak English. And so the non-Hispanic white physician, he says, what can I do for you?
She tells her daughter she has dolor del bazo, pain of the spleen. But the daughter couldn't quite translate that. So she tells the doctor, well, my mom has a dollar in the glass. The girl didn't know the word for spleen in Spanish, bazo, and heard vaso, which means glass. And so, pain of the spleen, dolor del vaso, became dolor del vaso, a dollar in the glass. And so the doctor was lost, and he couldn't help the mother. Just a few towns away, another young Mexican-American boy was having a very similar experience.
I would go with my grandmother to translate to the doctor, or my grandfather. Those were very personal experiences.
This boy's name was Arnaldo Torres. And neither he nor Max knew it at the time, but their paths were going to cross in a big way. Arnaldo was living in Sacramento, and he also was part of a Mexican-American family who made their living in the fields. And when he turned 10...
My grandfather told me that I was of the age in which I had to do la cosa cristiana, the Christian thing. And I asked him, Papi, what is that? And he says, you have to contribute to the well-being of the family. You have to work.
So he worked. And just like Max, Arnaldo spent countless hours as a child and teenager picking fruit in the fields until he was old enough to go out on his own. Arnaldo had his mind set on going to college, and so after getting a bachelor's degree in political science, he went far away from home, to Washington, D.C., to pursue a master's degree in public policy. And there, he experienced something completely new. At night, he would take walks on the Capitol grounds and reflect.
The Capitol is so beautiful at night with the way the lights are shined, and I remember telling myself, could you have imagined that you, the son and the grandson of farm workers, right now, in most instances, would be working in the fields, as opposed to walking on the grounds of the United States Capitol. It was truly an amazing feeling to never forget your roots, to see what was possible.
His goal was to work in politics and policy, so he could help change things for those back home. But the path he'd chosen was not easy. Pursuing a career in public policy as the son of Mexican farm workers came along with some serious challenges.
You were always having to prove yourself. Always. It never stops. You get tired. You know, you would know some of the staff people would say, oh, here comes the Mexican. He's going to talk to us about Mexican issues.
And back in California, Max Cuevas was in medical school at UC San Francisco, having very similar issues.
You took exams like everybody else, and you got in based on your academic credential. And so why is it that students and faculty alike can tell you you don't belong there? Is it because of your name, a Latino name? Is it because of your color? You know, what is it?
After getting his master's degree in 1977, Arnaldo started working in D.C. with the League of United Latin American Citizens. He worked on immigration reform, civil rights, housing, all kinds of issues facing Latino communities. And in 1985, he decided to come back to California to advise local health clinics. Meanwhile, Max, who had completed his residency in OBGYN at UCLA and Kern Medical Center, had a choice to make. He could go pretty much anywhere in the country to practice, but he decided to stay and do what he had set out to do as a kid, serve his community. So in 1987, Max, now Dr. Cuevas, became the chief medical officer at a little health clinic in Salinas, California, serving a farmworking community just like the ones he'd grown up with. It's called Clínica de Salud del Valle de Salinas, or CSVS. The Salinas Valley, about an hour's drive south of San Francisco, is known as the salad bowl of the world. It produces a huge amount of the fruits and vegetables we eat. And because of this, it has one of the highest populations of farm workers in the whole country. Arnaldo was advising the CSVS clinic, and this is where he and Max finally met.
He and I were drawn to each other because we both worked in the fields. There was a very special bond. There's a solidarity between us because of these experiences as children.
They knew each other in a way that others couldn't, and they both shared the same burning passion to help the people in their communities. And in 1993, something happened that would change the fabric of these communities and bring the clinic where Max worked to a breaking point. NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Thank you very much. Just a few minutes ago, the House of Representatives voted to approve the North American Free Trade Agreement. NAFTA will expand our exports, create new jobs, and help us reassert America's leadership in the global economy. This agreement is in the deep south.
NAFTA removed trade tariffs between the U.S. and Mexico, which opened the door for heavily subsidized U.S. agriculture companies to export their crops south of the border way below cost in the Mexican market. And the result was devastating. Many local Mexican farmers lost virtually all of their income.
They panicked. They had to find employment. They started going to the big cities in Mexico. There weren't jobs there. So they turned to the United States. And we had a major inflow of undocumented workers. Our health centers were completely inundated.
The CSVS clinic where Max worked was totally overwhelmed. there were more and more farm workers coming from Mexico speaking Spanish and indigenous languages, but not enough doctors who knew the languages or the culture.
Those communities, I think, are hardest hit by the inability of physicians working there to be able to communicate and to understand also the culture, how it is that people perceive their illness, their disease.
Patients weren't able to understand the severity of their illnesses or how to treat them. And in many cases, this was leading to patients not getting any medical care at all. Max saw firsthand what was happening to patients who weren't able to receive treatment for illnesses like diabetes.
Blood vessels are shutting down, scarring up, you know, blocking off. Different body parts begin to malfunction to the point where they stop functioning. People wind up losing kidneys, going on dialysis, going blind, feet, toes getting cut off.
You must have trust with the doctor. When you can't communicate, you don't have the foundational element for trust.
Arnaldo and Max decided they had to do something. The two men had very different professional experiences, but complementary skills. Arnaldo knew how to handle policies and politics, while Max knew the medical side. So together, they set off on a mission to find more Spanish-speaking doctors. First, they tried to convince the California medical school system to simply add culture and language programs, but they hit a wall.
We could not get those people at all to make any changes. They refused to provide any classes in culture, any classes in language.
The medical school system in California was not interested.
We tried everything we could for at least 2 years with the UC system. And after the first year, we recognized that they weren't going to budge.
So in 1997, with the problem growing even worse, Arnaldo came up with a wild plan.
I came up with the idea that the only avenue that we had was to go outside and see if we could bring doctors in.
And I said, what do we need to do? Who do we need to talk to? He was excited. I was hell excited myself, thinking, wow, we can make this thing happen.
The idea was to create a program that would allow Mexican doctors to work in the U.S. for 3 years in the areas that so desperately needed Spanish-speaking doctors. They were excited and ready to go, but the task ahead was monumental. To go south of the border and recruit doctors, they would need support from the U.S. and Mexican governments, California's Medical Board and Association, Mexican universities, and the California medical school system, which had already been so difficult to breach. It seemed impossible. But without any other options, they pressed ahead.
We realized and understood it's going to be a hard fight, but we're in it to win.
I knew it was going to be a formidable initiative because of who we had against us, which was everybody. I mean everybody.
Max and Arnaldo knew their idea to recruit doctors from Mexico would be a tough sell, but they didn't realize just how tough.
I was surprised by Latino physicians and Latino physician groups that were against the program. In fact, one of them dubbed the program a Mexican Bracero doctor program.
The Bracero program was a now infamous initiative that brought Mexican farm workers to the U.S. to support agriculture during and after the Second World War. But many braceros were cheated and abused by employers and exposed to harmful pesticides, which gave the program a bad name. This, of course, was nothing like that, but still, people had all kinds of pushback. Some argued that Mexican doctors were substandard compared to American doctors.
Clearly, they did not understand how insulting and offensive that concept and that statement was, but that is the argument they gave.
Others argued that this program would be replacing or taking the jobs of U.S. Latino doctors, that it was a form of competition.
There's so much need in healthcare out there, especially in low-income communities. You can bring a lot of physicians and you're still not going to scratch the surface.
And others just didn't like the idea itself. But after 3 long years of meetings, of advocating and talking to hundreds of people, they succeeded to get it on a bill in the California legislature. And guess what? It passed. Bill AB 1045 was signed into law by then-Governor Gray Davis in September of 2002. But this was just the beginning.
The easy part is done.
Because there were so many fears about the Mexican doctors not being up to par, part of the bill specified that they would do an orientation program with the UC school system that would help the new doctors integrate into the American medical system. The next big hurdle was to get the UC school system to follow through.
We went to them thinking that they're going to embrace the program. And then when they came out and told us, flat out, in our face, that they wanted nothing to do with this program, that to begin with, doctors from Mexico are inferior.
We could not implement it because there was no UC medical school that wanted to cooperate. It just languished. Oh, the frustration, all the suffering that our population is going through because they can't access medical care.
I reached out to UC Medical School to ask about this. They told me in an email that, quote, the University of California did not take a position opposing AB 1045, end quote. They added that they strongly support the goals of the legislation. Max says there was no support when they first tried to launch the program, which was a big blow, but he tried to stay optimistic.
I didn't think it was over. I just thought, let's take a deep breath, you know, let's go to halftime. Let's regroup, change our game plan, and let's go out and give them hell.
By this point, they were exhausted, and their careers were already demanding enough. The program was put on hold. Months turned into years, and time went on. But the farm workers still worked. They still got sick. They still couldn't understand doctors. They still suffered. The clinics tried to make it work with interpreters, but they were nowhere near enough. And even when they did find one, the nuances of doctor-patient conversations would often get lost in the translation. It just didn't work. And as time went on, more and more migrant workers came to harvest and pack the food that feeds the country. And the lack of Spanish-speaking doctors grew even more dire. By 2015, Max's clinic in Salinas was completely overwhelmed. So he picked up the phone and made a call to his old friend.
He called me up and he said, is this project still accessible? Can we still implement it? And I said, yes, we can. He goes, well, let's try it again.
They decided to give their effort to bring Mexican doctors to the U.S. one more shot. But this time, they had a new idea to get the physicians evaluated. They decided to try and work with a local hospital. They chose Natividad Medical Center, right next door in Salinas.
We went to them and said, would you be willing to sponsor the orientation program?
It took lots of meetings and some negotiating, but in the end,
we were absolutely so pleased that it was unanimous, and the interest by the board in supporting this was beyond anything that we could have expected.
So in early August of 2021, the first of 30 Mexican doctors got on a plane and flew to California.
August the 9th was the first day the doctor began to see patients.
Then another 10 came in March, 10 more in September, 7 more in January. Little by little, the doctors started to trickle in.
Mucho gusto en saludarlo otra vez.
This is Dr. Armando Moreno, an OBGYN from Mexico City. Today, he's seeing a patient for a checkup at the Clinic de Salud's Sanborn location. She's 33 weeks pregnant. He chats comfortably with her and looks at the patient kindly as he asks what the name of the baby will be.
¿Cómo se va a llamar?
Isabela.
Isabela. Muy bien, pues vamos a hablarle como entonces. Isabela, nuestra querida Isabela.
All the news is good. Isabella weighs 1,850 grams. She's healthy and kicking.
My first day here, I was really scared. To be honest, I was really scared.
In 2016, he got a call from his supervisor in Mexico City telling him about a program.
He told me, hey, I have this invitation for you. I met these guys, Arnoldo, Dr. Cuevas, and I think this work fits with you.
His whole body lit up with excitement.
Sometimes in our lifetime, we have these moments when you feel like this burning sensation inside your heart, when you know that something's going to change.
And this was one of those moments.
I said, I can't miss this opportunity. I need to be part of it.
He applied, then waited 6 whole years until finally in July 2022, he got the news. He and his wife quit their jobs, moved out of the house, and boarded a plane to San Francisco with their 2 cats to start their new adventure.
You enter to the room. Of course, the patient is waiting for you, and you enter. When you say these words in Spanish, you can notice in the patient's eyes this small smile, and you know that the patient is comfortable. You know that the patient is happy.
As happy as one can be at the doctor's office.
You build this bridge between you and your patient. There's a lot of unconscious background, mutual understanding, like this empathy. There's like a sublime, subconscious communication between people from the same culture.
Sí, 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 se siente estrés porque te hablan y no sabes qué contestar, pues no entiendes.
This is Blanca, one of Armando's patients at the clinic.
Y aquí la verdad que sí. Donde vas, simplemente para hacer las citas. A mí se me hacía al principio bien difícil, pero no, yo ahorita y aquí ya me siento como pez en el agua, porque siempre hay alguien que te va a contestar en español.
Blanca is saying how, in the past, it's been so stressful for her to go to the doctor, that she doesn't understand what the doctors are saying or how she should respond. Even making the appointment is difficult. But now she feels so comfortable here at the clinic. Blanca has such a strong level of trust with Armando that she feels like he's her psychologist.
People here, most of them have really difficult experiences in their lives, in their past. I've heard terrible stories about crossing the border, crossing the Guatemala-Mexico border. I mean, people struggle so much to be here.
As an OBGYN, Armando sees many, many women who've been sexually assaulted along their journey. Teenagers tell stories of being separated from their parents. Women and men open up about abuse, depression, and anxiety in their lives.
I think that it's this opportunity we have to try to help them to open their hearts and to speak openly about it. This is the first step for healing.
A lot of those patients now say, for the first time, I understand what the hell is going on with my illness. And then they ask me, why did the doctors not tell us that before? And I tell them, well, you probably didn't understand.
Today, there are 30 doctors in the program. Each of them will serve for 3 years and be able to help hundreds of Spanish-speaking patients before returning back to Mexico. The goal is to have even more doctors, dentists, and psychiatrists take part in the program in the coming years. An updated version of the bill aims to have over 200 doctors by 2036. But it's important to note that while AB 1045 is making a huge impact in people's lives, the scope of the problem is too big for one program to handle. Here's Arnaldo.
It's a Band-Aid. It was never intended to be the answer. It was intended to provide time for the UC system to take on greater responsibility.
The scope of the problem is huge, and this program can't fix everything. But for Max, for Arnaldo, and all the Mexican doctors, there's a victory in every single visit where a person who felt alone can see that they have someone on their side.
We have medical science, but we also have to take care about what they believe, what they fear. We need to take care of the human part.
Health isn't only about medicine or treatments. It doesn't just mean that one's body is free from pain or injury. It's also the need to be seen, to be heard. And as these Mexican doctors are learning, it's the need to be understood that beats at the heart of human health.
This story was reported and produced by Charlie Garcia in collaboration with the podcast In Confianza from Pulso, which tells stories about finding belonging in the experience of being Latino in the U.S. The collaboration is part of a reporting initiative supported by the Commonwealth Fund. Additional field reporting by Jackie Nowak and additional audio editing by Julian Blackmore. Special thanks to Eric Lopez, Myra Pantoja, and the staff at Clínica de Salud de Valle de Salinas.